welcome to another edition of the NB Update. I'm your host, David Korncotch, reporting for the NB Media Co-op from Moncton. Today, we're looking at a major issue affecting many First Nations people in Canada, the second generation cutoff. It's a provision that removes Indian status after two generations with one non-status parent. Indian status is a category under Canadian law linked with identity and legal rights. Mi'kmaq Senator Paul Prosper and his supporters say the second generation cutoff rule must be abolished to avoid bureaucratic extinction of people with Indian status. Prosper recently put forward legislative amendments that would eliminate the second generation cutoff. Here he is speaking at a Senate committee meeting.
I chose to champion this amendment because I believe there is nothing more vital to the survival of First Nations than this change. The fact is that we cannot govern who First Nations fall in love with. This change says, love who you love, and do not worry because your children will not fall by the wayside just because you choose to pair it with someone not First Nation.
But the federal government has signaled that it opposes those legislative amendments. Mandy Gilmasty, the Minister of Indigenous Services, has said that the second generation cutoff is very discriminatory, but that more consultation is needed to find a solution. Here she is in a recent interview with the NB Media Co-op.
Maybe people don't always understand that the senatorial process of making a decision is very different than one of a minister. So I have to follow a path that's required of me, which is to ensure that I uphold the duty to consult. Section 35 rights holders have the legal and constitutional duty to be consulted when you make change in the Indian Act.
We'll have more on this story in just a few moments, right after these news updates. First up, this year has seen a record-breaking number of temporary foreign workers in New Brunswick deemed vulnerable. Temporary foreign workers in Canada have closed permits binding them to a specific workplace. That means they can't seek employment elsewhere except by applying for a special type of open work permit available only for vulnerable workers who are victims of abuse. Federal government data shows that the number of people in New Brunswick who hold a permit through the Vulnerable Workers Program has climbed annually. That figure was 120 people in 2024 compared to 85 the previous year. And this year, the number of migrant workers deemed vulnerable reached 170 by the end of the third quarter alone. One advocate says those numbers probably reflect greater awareness among migrant workers about their labor rights, while abuses continue in the temporary foreign worker program. Here's Christian Sanabria, a community legal worker with the Madhu Verma Migrant Justice Center, which is based in Fredericton.
There's more awareness between the workers. When I first started in the Madhu Center in 2023, most of the workers didn't know what to do. For example, I got fired from my job or I'm not getting hours, so what can I do? So we were the ones that tell them you can apply for an open work permit for vulnerable workers if you are facing abusive situations. Now, most of the workers that come say, I want to apply for an open work permit for vulnerable workers because of this, this, and this. So they know their rights now. They know that they can apply for a vulnerable worker open work permit if they are facing abusive situations. In 2023, that was not the case.
Check out our online publication, nbmediacoop.org, for the full story. In other news, resource companies are snapping up exploration rights for land directly bordering the site of the controversial Sisson project. That's the proposed tungsten and molybdenum mine 60 kilometers northwest of Fredericton. Licensed prospectors can acquire exploration rights by staking claims, which in New Brunswick is now done through an online system called NBE Claims. Those exploration rights can also be bought and sold. Macanita Resources and Adelaide Exploration, two junior publicly traded companies based in Vancouver, have recently announced acquisitions totaling more than 7,700 hectares, or 77 square kilometers. Companies including SQM Canada and Great Atlantic Resources have also registered claims near the Sisson project site this year, according to provincial government records. The latest acquisitions follow efforts from Ottawa and the Pentagon to speed up the development of the Sisson project. That long-delayed project received environmental approvals from the provincial government in 2015 and from Ottawa in 2017, but environmental advocates have warned about potential environmental harms, especially the risk that its tailing dam will breach, potentially devastating the Nashwauk watershed. Go to nbmediacoop.org for our full story. In other environmental news, an influential article arguing that glyphosate does not cause cancer has been retracted 25 years after its publication. One of the authors was a senior official at Health Canada before he died in 2011. The article was originally published by the peer-reviewed journal Regulatory Toxicology and Pharmacology. It evaluated the safety of Roundup and its active ingredient, glyphosate. The herbicide was originally manufactured by Monsanto before the company was acquired by German multinational Bayer AG in 2018. The retracted article's conclusions on cancer and glyphosate were solely based on unpublished studies from Monsanto, and the authors ignored multiple other studies, according to a statement from the journal. Employees from Monsanto may have partially ghostwritten the article, and the listed authors may have received financial compensation from the company that wasn't disclosed, the statement continues. About 15,000 hectares of land are sprayed with herbicides, including glyphosate, every year in New Brunswick, according to the Department of Natural Resources. Go to nbmediacoop.org for more on this story. Meanwhile, the provincial and federal governments have announced a cooperation agreement on environmental impact assessments. The new agreement is part of efforts to speed up natural resource development in response to the trade war launched by U.S. President Donald Trump. Under the agreement, major projects will go through an approach called One Project, One Review. Premier Susan Holt and Federal Cabinet Minister Dominique LeBlanc said this approach will eliminate duplication of assessments, but also protect the environment and allow for the necessary consultations and accommodations with Indigenous people. But the agreement has attracted opposition from the group MTI, which represents 8 Mi'kmaq communities in New Brunswick, on matters related to Indigenous rights. Before the deal was finalized, MTI sent a 3-page letter to federal authorities saying in part that MTI cannot condone or consent to an agreement or an approach to impact assessment that is premised on the idea that the Crown should ultimately take the lead on decisions involving environmental and other impacts in our territory, and which treats First Nations as an afterthought. A spokesperson for MTI told the NB Media Co-op that the deal does not appear to contain any substantive changes addressing their concerns, and that the government of New Brunswick did not consult with the Mi'kmaq on the new agreement. During the media conference announcing the deal, Premier Holt commented on MTI's involvement. Here's part of what she said.
We share their desire to have them more involved, and they now have a provincial government that is that's keen to partner with them and leverage their expertise on the technical review side of our environmental impact assessments.
Critics have said governments are using the tariff crisis as a pretext to push through policies that will increase corporate power, an example of so-called disaster capitalism. The NB Media Co-op asked Premier Holt and Minister LeBlanc to respond.
Our announcement today is about not wasting a single tax dollar and making sure that we have eliminated redundancy and duplication. We've been efficient in our efforts. We've coordinated our timelines and our teams so that we have one project going through one clear and robust review that leverages the strengths and benefits of the federal government's expertise, the provincial government's expertise, local and Indigenous expertise, so that we can move major projects forward in a way that protects and benefits New Brunswick and Canada. That's what today's announcement is about.
I obviously don't share the premise of your question or the way you presented the question. I wouldn't agree with the premise. We ran an election campaign this year with a commitment to Canadians that we would get big projects done quickly. So sitting here with the Premier is an absolute continuation of the mandate It's also true that our economy is facing significant headwinds because of the application of U.S. tariffs on sectors of the economy that are critical to the economic prosperity of the country. If you're working in one of those industries and one of those sectors today, to suddenly see hiring job fairs where hundreds of people will be hired in good-paying long-term jobs is, I think, a very responsible thing for governments to look at.
The NB Media Co-op has also reached out to Willistiqui Nation in New Brunswick for their comment on the new arrangement, and we will continue to follow the story. And in international news, a student in the Gaza Strip faces a dilemma. He's been accepted into the Master of Computer Science program at the University of New Brunswick, but Canadian authorities won't issue him a study permit unless he submits biometrics, fingerprints, and photographs. But to do so, he must leave the Gaza Strip, which is virtually impossible without already holding a travel visa, according to advocates. Here's the student, 23-year-old Bara, speaking to the NB Media Co-op recently through an unstable Zoom connection. The NB Media Co-op has agreed to identify him only by his first name in order to protect his safety.
Even now, airstrike and drones are parts of our daily life. There is no stable electricity or clean water, and finding food is a struggle. We are not asking for sympathy. We are asking for fairness and a chance to reach the classroom that already accepted us.
More than 130 students in the Gaza Strip are awaiting study permits after being accepted into 26 Canadian universities. The nonprofit group Palestinian Students and Scholars at Risk recently stated, some have been waiting since June 2024. Advocates say the delays reflect a lack of political will and that Canada is discriminating against Palestinian students who have already endured incredible hardships. They're calling for Canada to take steps to immediately evacuate the students from the Gaza Strip. Here's Nada El Falou, Director of Student Services with PSSAR.
Other countries have done this successfully. Other countries also have biometrics requirements. They have their own security requirements. They're not just letting people in without any kind of background checks. They are doing background checks, but they're able to do it. Canada is choosing not to. Canada is putting in these invisible barriers and just, you know, making up excuses to not give visas to these students.
The Canadian government has stated that it's committed to a fair and non-discriminatory application of immigration procedures. A letter-writing campaign has been launched to support Bara and other Palestinian students. You can find it on actionnetwork.org. And now for our main story. A Mi'kmaq senator is pushing for legislative changes that would eliminate the second generation cutoff from the Indian Act. It's a rule that prevents people from passing on Indian status to their children following two consecutive generations with one non-status parent. Senator Paul Prosper's amendments to Bill S-2 were recently approved by a Senate committee in a 10-to-1 vote. The bill is now in the House of Commons. A number of Indigenous rights organizations and leaders across the Wabanaki region have thrown their support behind the initiative, including MTI, the Assembly of Nova Scotia Mi'kmaq Chiefs, the Mi'kmaq Grand Council, and at least one Willistiqui chief. But the federal government has indicated that it opposes those changes.
I wish to briefly put the government's position on the record. Bill S-2, as the chair just underlined, is primarily a response to Nicholas versus Canada. The bill will ensure entitlement to registration for individuals and their descendants who lost it through enfranchisement, affecting approximately 3,500 individuals. This is the core of the bill, and I question whether the amendments fall within its scope. As you all know, there is also a court deadline that must be respected, April 30th, 2026. The minister must exercise her constitutional duty to consult. The government is committed to finding ways in which to address the second generation cutoff.
Senator Prosper recently held a news conference in Fredericton where several Indigenous leaders from the region renewed calls for the second generation cutoff to be eliminated. Here's Chief Alan Pulchies Jr. from Sitansisk First Nation, also called St. Mary's.
46% of my community members are 6'2", registered. I'm on the brink in at least 10, 20 years, I won't have any registered Indians in my community because of a bill that the government of Canada has on the table. Today, we have the opportunity to change that. We have to, of course, lobby folks in Ottawa to ensure that, of course, this bill gets through.
The NB Media Co-op asked people in Elsabuktuk for their take on the issue. Here are some of their voices.
I mean, if you want to have a kid with a non-native person, your kid should be able to get status, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, you're still native. Your dad's a native. Why wouldn't you be a native?
I think that it is an issue that a lot of people, especially people I know of, face, where they get that 6'2 and then the cutoff. Like, I personally know of my nephew got cut off from that eligibility. But it's also, it begs the question of how are they going to fund, like, is there going to be an influx of too many, what would be the correct term, too many people within the system? Like, how could the bands afford it? I think that it is something a lot of people do need, but I think that we also have to build upon the band membership and how that funding goes about, just so there's a lot of people that are struggling, and this doesn't impact the people struggling more.
For more on this issue, NB Media Co-op volunteer Leisha Francis spoke to Senator Paul Prosper and Mandy Gilmasty, the Minister of Indigenous Services. We go now to highlights from those interviews. Check out our online publication and our YouTube channel for the full interviews.
Today we are speaking with Senator Paul Prosper. He has proposed changes to the Indian Act that would get rid of the second generation cutoff. So, Senator Paul, can you explain for people who might not be familiar what the second generation cutoff and why it is a problem?
The second generation cutoff is something that had been introduced within the Indian Act through Bill C-31 in 1985. And what that provides is two successive generations, if you can imagine, of parenting between a status Indian and a non-status person, within two generations of that, and one can think about it in terms of the grandchildren, they would no longer have any status under the Indian Act, a discriminatory provision that offends the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Discrimination based on sex and certain, and something that offends the equality provisions within the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And so we sought to get rid of the second generation cutoff to restore status to persons who have one parent, if they could trace, you know, their ancestry to back to one status person, then they would equally have status, and that status would be passed down in perpetuity through successive generations. They would also be entitled to be registered on their band list, the list that they're most affiliated with through the status parent.
Do you possibly predict like a financial strain on First Nation communities if the new abundance of registered members come up?
Well, hopefully, with, increased numbers of status Indians through these provisions, that there would be increased funding for communities from the federal government to accommodate these numbers. I don't want to be pessimistic and say government is only concerned about, wanting to spend as least amount of money as possible. It's always been a plan, we know, for the federal government to get rid of Indian people, for them to slowly assimilate and become into the, you know, a part of the larger Canadian politic or, you know, society. And it's incumbent upon every government official to recognize that that we have constitutionally protected rights as Indigenous people.
So we've been speaking to Senator Paul Prosper. Thank you for speaking to NB Media Co-op.
Thank you.
Today we are speaking with Minister of Indigenous Services, Maudie Galmasti. She's a member of the Cree Nation, was wannabe in Central Quebec, and she is the first ever Indigenous person to serve in the role of Minister of Indigenous Services. Thank you for joining us, Mandy.
Thank you, Leisha. Thank you for having me.
On the second generation cut-up, as you know, senators have passed amendments to Bill S2 to abolish this rule, which removes Indian status following two generations with a non-status parent. And the government's representative in the Senate outlined the government's position. Essentially, he said that the government opposes these amendments to S2, but that the government intends to address these issues later. What's your comment?
So I think that the Senate, you know, I want to acknowledge that they are doing, good faith work. They want to address a very, very important issue. I, as a minister, also want to address a very important issue. The question is just the procedural technicality. I must uphold the duty to consult. Maybe one of the things that I want to share and emphasize is while the Senate has come up with a solution, which is to revert back to a one-parent rule, taking the Indian Act back to pre-1985, I think that it's really important that we do the work with community for them to identify and determine who their members are, you know, who are citizens of their nation. Because Section 35 of UNDRIP clearly states that this is something that they should be able to do for themselves. I'm trying to respect that as a minister. I know that everybody believes that accepting a solution right away is the best next step. I just have to make sure that the work that I'm doing, I am offering them something that they can apply and work with. A one-parent rule is one type of solution, but that could be applied very differently under different governance systems. So it's really important that we do this work, and we will continue to, you know, move forward with the process of consultation on looking at those.
Critics say that there has been enough consultation on this topic already and that the government is just trying to delay getting rid of second generation cutoff. How would you respond?
I just want to clarify that the consultations that we are undertaking is really looking at what are the options or what are the solutions that communities wish to define for themselves in addressing second generation. And that question, I think, is one that we really, really have to explore, because a one-parent rule could work in some places. In some nations, they could apply different criteria. They could want to look at, you know, recognition by community or, you know, different clauses that really identify how this person is received in community, or the preparedness of being able to identify what are the steps that the community takes to receive new members. So I really believe that we have to explore all of those things and create the right solution or response to second generation, because in this country, governance is different in every nation.
So briefly, can we talk about the federal budget?
Sure, of course.
Okay. The budget says your department will find savings of 2%. But as you know, a lot of people have been concerned about programs related to Jordan's principle getting cut off and just not enough resources for people in First Nations in general. How do you plan to address the Jordan principles issue?
When we did the budget exercise, we were one of the departments that was actually asked to explore what a 15% reduction would look like. We did that exercise. We did the evaluation. We were alarmed with what the outcome looked like. We took it to the Prime Minister. We took it to the Minister of Finance. They made the decision that they would have a reduction and that we would stay within a 2% space. I'm confident in that decision because We know that there are some duplications and inefficiencies in programming that, you know, we've had previously. We are trying to streamline, we're trying to modernize, but we're trying to make sure that the programs and services that we have are hitting the targets that they're intended for. So we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that in the next step moving forward, we're able to address those, you know, those outcomes. It's one of the things that, you know, the Prime Minister asked me to identify. What is outcomes that communities are looking for in terms of the programs and services they receive? This is more work that we're going to do. I think it's really critical we do that work with community. So looking to do that enhanced engagement. In terms of some things that you see in the budget, I think there was a lot of confusion when a very particular chart full of zeros was circulated on social media. This, I think people interpreted that as that was the 2% cut. In fact, that is not what the 2% is. That chart just refers to, we need to identify the outcomes that we're looking for so that we can determine what that funding is going to look like in the future. So it's really important that we do that work with community to identify what does a good quality outcome look for, what look like for your community, what is your hope for, you know, the future space and vision of how you want your community to look. That is what's going to identify what those zeros turn into in the future. And one, you know, one last part, the last part of your question refers to Jordan's principle. Jordan's principle is not a program or service. It's a legal responsibility that we have to respond to. There's still funding identified for this year. Jordan's principle is a decision that really upholds the need to ensure that we are closing the gap between provincial and federal jurisdiction in delivery of health services. And we're looking to create some change to Jordan's principle in collaboration with community, in collaboration with users of Jordan's principle, in collaboration with those individuals who implement Jordan's principle funding, because there were some previous decisions in operational bulletin that made changes to Jordan's principle, but they were kind of taken in a context where there was not a lot of, I guess I'm going to say it was a high level decision that maybe there wasn't the understanding or realization that some of those decisions really had a huge impact on how this the Jordan's principle worked. So we really want to address those issues. And we believe that in doing that work with community, we can identify a good process to respond to the people that need to use Jordan's principle. And it is clear that there is a need for Jordan's principle. And we are going to respect and uphold what duty we have in this space.
I've been speaking with Mandy Galmasti, Minister of Indigenous Services. She's the first ever Indigenous person in that role. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for the time.
And thanks to volunteer Alicia Francis for her work on those interviews. Bill S2 is currently in the House of Commons after having passed first reading. We'll keep following the story. Thanks for tuning into the NB Media Co-op today. I'm David Gordon Koch reporting from Moncton, wishing you a happy holiday season. We'll be right back.